Hi, buddy. My name is Jesse, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Jesse.
And first of all, I just want to tell you that I paid a lot of money to lose everything that I had. I voluntarily just paid it off. I went in my pockets, and I gave it to whoever had it. You know what I did? I stole for it. I gave up a job for it. Let me take you back. There was a time when I was like, you know, young buck and hang out with my father. And my father was the kind of guy that, he was a man like in the neighborhood. So I got to go a lot of places with him, and that entailed doing a lot of things. But my father liked to drink beer, you know, so I was the guy that every now and then he let me sip a little bit around his buddies, and they had things called beer gardens, and they were like clubs, they called them like nightclubs then, but a lot of people would gather around and music be playing and everything, and I'd start dancing, you know. And I'd get quarters and nickels and stuff. And it was sound like it was a pretty good idea. So that was first a part of my show business, you know. And I remember that every time then I would go with him, I would say, "Hey, Pop, let me dance, you know." And then they would give me a little sip of beer, and I'd just go wild, you know. And then I grew up. I got a little bit older, and I started smoking pot. Now, I'll tell you how I got introduced to it. It's my 17th birthday, and I was working at the Hot Shops up in Rockville Pike. That's when it used to be a Hot Shop there. And I was washing dishes. Well, I came home and the Southeast, and my buddies, they met me down in the corner. They say, "Jesse, it's time to be a man now." I say, "Time to be a man." I say, "I am a man." They say, "You haven't been a man until you tried this," you know. And so, take a puff. It'll make you feel pretty good. So I took a puff. I mean, these guys I hang out with all the time, right? I took a puff. Then I took another puff, you know. And then when we got up to the house, which was probably about a block away, I walked in and everybody jumped out and surprised me. And man, I didn't feel it then. It didn't bother me then. You know, it was like, cool. So we're everybody's in the room, they're dancing and stuff. And you gotta remember, I grew up a long time ago, you know. So we're changing the record starts to skip, and while everybody's dancing, so I reach down and pick up the hi-fi, so to speak. I pick up the thing, and I'm talking to somebody, and while somebody's talking to me, the thing fell down and fell right on top of my fingers. And I looked at it and everybody just went like, and I went, and that was the most funniest thing that ever happened to me. I didn't feel anything at that time. So from that time, it was that. That was my thing. Little beer, little marijuana, you know. So life was going along, you know, I'm smoking pot, I'm having fun. Me and my father live together because my mom and pop, they broke up. So I'm staying with them, and life is good for me. I mean, me and my pop living together, there's no problems. You know, I can do what I want. He leave me $20 anytime I want, you know. So that's how I'm going to school and doing this and doing that, you know. So I get a little bored of that, though. So I decided that it was time to do something different. I looked around the neighborhood, and I wanted to do something different. So I went down to the recruiter's office, and I joined the Marines, you know. And then when I got in the Marines, I was in Vietnam. And when I walked in Vietnam, there was a lot of stuff going on. There was the Tet Offensives, and it was a big thing with the North and the South and stuff. And I found myself right in the middle of it. When I first got there, the first thing that happened when I got to base, when I landed in Dung Ha, the first thing that happened getting off the plane, we got bombed. And what I did was I ran and I jumped in this hole because we heard this sound said, pop, 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 pop. And when we heard the guy told me, when you hear that pop, 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 pop sound, to jump, to run, to find a hole. So what I did was everybody looked at each other, the supplies went everywhere, and everybody ran, and I ran, I jumped in this hole. And when I jumped in this hole, this dude stuck a M16 a rifle, and one had a 45 and stuck it right at me. And I said, they said, don't ever jump in a hole unless you say Marine is coming in a hole, right? So from that day on, I learned how to say Marines coming in a hole. But what they did was say, here, take this. This'll calm you down. And they gave me a joint. And that was as well. From that point on, it was like weeks and months and months. And I had my choice. I could have got heroin. You know, I smoked a lot of hashes over there. You know, I smoked mostly reefer, plenty of beer. You could get it sometimes, you know, like that. You know, so those kind of things were kind of good. But I decided I wanted to live, so I stuck to the weed. But we had a doc, in the Marine Corps, we had a guy, it was a doctor called Corman. And Doc Buss would give you morphine if you wanted it, you know. And I tried it one time, but it blew my mind. I couldn't do anything, and I wanted to live, so I said, screw that shit, you know. So anyway, I came back home. But when I got back home, I didn't know what to do with myself. I'm 14 months in Vietnam walking, rifling, shooting, you know, trying to live, and I didn't know what to do with myself. So I sought out the vets. So I went downtown, that's where we all hung at. I went downtown and I met some people down there. And one of the guys I met down there was a guy that had been over Nam with me. He was a hippie, and we hooked up. And we hooked up and we started selling weed. And we started selling like pounds of weed. And we started selling like 2 or 3 pounds of weed. And we started selling like a whole lot of weed and stuff. But we had this thing that we wanted to get, you know, we wanted to try some heroin. So, you know, why not? So we tried some heroin. So me and him, we got to the point that we would go like downtown. And we would cop down 12th Street, U Street. You know, we would do our thing. But the same time we were doing it, you know, we had to go into some places to get high. And some of them was pretty shady places. So I had to learn, like somebody said, the streets will eat you up. I had to learn the streets pretty quick. I wasn't pretty much afraid of the streets because I had just come from Nam. I knew how to carry a gun. I carried one. I knew what a gun felt like. You know, I knew what it felt like to be scared, to be nervous and stuff. So it didn't bother me. But when you're talking about in some of the spaces, when the guy walked up to me and said, I want your dope. He said, I want your dope. And I'm down there I'm sitting there, and I'm in a whole room full of junkies. And we trying to get off and do say, hey, man, hey, short, I want your dope. I said, why don't you go get it from someplace else? You know, he said, well, I want yours. I said, well, you can't have mine. And he said, well, I'm going to take it. And I said, well, come and get it. And he came in, when he was coming to get it, my boy Dale pulled out his pistol, and I just pulled out mine. And me and Dale went back to back up the steps, you know. And we went back up the steps. We end up taking their shit, you know. We took theirs because that's the way it was, you know. So anyway, so as we go along a little further, I just want to tell you that my life was supposed to be about school. You know, I was trying to go to school. I was trying to do things that were beneficial. You know, like I wanted to be a fireman. That was a lifelong dream of mine one time, to be a fireman. I grew up as a kid wanting to be a fireman. I passed the test. I did great on the test and everything. But I was junkied up. I took the test as a junkie, you know. And I couldn't, when my buddy started telling me, man, they're not going to take you because I say, you know, because you this, because you that. I say, what do you mean? He said, well, man, they're not going to take you. So I said, like, hey, give me a break. You know, I listened to them, and my life turned around that time. So what I did was I got mad with myself. I got mad at myself, and I went back to shooting more dope. I didn't have what my life led to at that particular time because I figured I hadn't done anything worthwhile. The next thing I know, life had gotten bad because Dale had gone back to Ohio. I was here. Life was getting bad. I was starting to get in trouble. I couldn't produce a lot of stuff. My funds were drying up. And next thing I know, I was trying to make sure that I had money. Now, how can I get money? I got to go steal it. So I'm stealing now. I've come down from a guy that was selling pounds of dope to a guy that can't even get a dollar. So now I'm trying to get money. So what do? The best thing I do, I go into the stores. We got Safeways, we got Giants, we got Grand Unions, we got all these places. So that's where I went. And I tell you, going in them places on a daily basis, it's really a scary situation, but my dope fiend would not let me stop. I had to have that thing at all costs. So what I did was, I got it at all costs. What happened was I'd become so much the junkie that I was sitting on the corner of Talbot Street and Martin Luther King Avenue in Southeast. And a guy walked up to me and said, hey, I heard about you. He says, would you like to, let me go back. I had ended up up in Northwest. And I was staying up there off 9th and O Street. I figured if I go downtown and I could work my way downtown, I could find something to do. So I saw somebody that I thought needed me, and I hooked up with her and I moved in with her. You know, but all the time she was as straight as a lace and I was as crooked as could be. And what happened was I started using her house to do my dirt with, and she got tired of me. So she put me out after probably about 3 months. You know, and I end up staying with this guy, another guy named Jesse. Jesse said, come on, stay with me. I said, okay, I'll go with you, Jesse, no problem. You know, I said, where you standing? He said, I got a place around the corner. I said, okay, let's go. We ran around the corner. Jesse then broke in one of the abandoned buildings and set up an electrical system and everything. He's got everything we need in there. So we stand in the abandoned minions, right? And that's all we can do. So I'm saying to myself, this ain't for me, man. I say, this can't be for me. I said, something in my head told me, say, Jesse, you can do better than this. You know, but I didn't. So what I did was, I kept doing it. Then I met this guy that was up there, and this guy was working at this tire company. And while he was working in this tire company, it wasn't a tire company, it was like a gas station that sold tires. And if you think in the alley, there's this alley right here, and there was the company right there, and there was some apartments with the, you know, the two-story garden apartment with the steps that come down the back. Well, I'm parked in the back of the alley, and he's throwing tires over the fence at me. So like every day, we're getting two and three carloads of tires. I'm like, we're gonna get caught doing this shit, man. But I never got caught. But he would throw them tires over that thing, and I'd take them tires, and I didn't pay attention to whether the police was going to get me or not. It didn't matter. You know, I just wanted to get what I wanted to get. I was living pretty low at the time. My thought was still living kind of high, but my means were low. You know, everything I was doing, I couldn't get anything together. I couldn't find a way out. I couldn't find out what was going on with me. Even though I knew I was intelligent enough to do something about it, I couldn't do nothing about it because I was in it so deep that I couldn't do nothing about it. Because I wanted to get out of it, I couldn't get out of it. I kept thinking like it was kept like going just like that, back and forth, left and right and stuff. And I remember praying a couple of times, but it didn't work out. You know, it didn't work out. I tried going to church a couple of times. It just didn't work out. I couldn't do it. And next thing I know, I was in Sears. And I went in Sears, and I grabbed a whole bunch of coats. And I never did this before in my life. Never. I grabbed a whole bunch of, I walked right into Sears and grabbed a whole bunch of coats and walked out and got out. I got out. I was like, I'm the man. You know what I mean? I mean, how do you walk in Sears and take a whole bunch of coats? You know. So what I do, I could go into the Shoppers, Grand Union, stuff like that. You know, I mean, I could come out of there. I wasn't there for the minute, but I could have two steaks here, two steaks here, ham here, two steaks here, dot, dee, dot, and then have a trash can full of meats and walk out. I said, how did I do it? This is good. I love it, you know, and that's what I was doing. You know, that's what I was doing. And then one day, I was over in Virginia, and the guy noticed me, and I had to leave everything, and I tripped going out the door. Whoop! And that's how I got the scar on my nose. Right, that's how I tripped right at the door. I was trying to get out and hit my nose. Bam! You know, I said, oh, you know, no, I hauled ass through the car. I don't know how I got away, but I said I got away. You know, I did it. You know, and then I'm at home when I met. I had this girl that I met, and me and her, we were staying at the tire guy's house, which was his grandmother's house, which was a house he was abusing because everybody was going in there getting high. And he had a place, it was like a three-story townhouse, and all the dope shooters would be downstairs on the second floor. Grandma was downstairs on the first floor, and me and him and whoever we would be up on the top floor. So we up on the top floor, and me and my girl, and we staying and sleeping on the mattress, and I wake up in the morning, I'm sleeping like, I always pretty much slept like this most time when I was someplace, and I wake up, and there's like about four guys looking at me, and I'm saying like, hey, you know, I recognize you, this. I say, what's up? He say, I said, you won. What? He said, we want her. You want her. I said, you can't have her. I said, she's with me. You know, she's with me. You know, see, I had developed a sense of do or die situation because I didn't die in Nam. So, you know, so I ain't dying in Nam. So, hey, I'm not going to take this shit from nobody out here. You know. So anyway, she said, okay. So they said, well, we're going to take it if you don't give it to us. I said, go ahead, try it, you know. And when while walking to me, I pulled out my gun. And I say, the first one to make the first move is going to die like the gook I just shot when I was in Vietnam. I said, get up. And we got up. And we walked on down the steps, just like I did the other place. And then the guy with the tie said, what's wrong, man? I said, man. I said, I'm gone. We end up in Chinatown. I called my father. I said, hey, Pop. I said, how about letting me come home for a while? He said, no, son. I said, Pop, just give me a week, will you? I said, I'm out here in the streets. You know, I'm in Chinatown. Nowhere to go. He said, oh, he said, okay. He said, you can stay for a couple of days. So about 5 years later, you know, we were, you know, still there. I was still there. But during this time is when I met the guy that walked up to me and said, hey, man, I got a whole bunch of dope. I need somebody to sell it for me. I said, I'm your man, you know. And so I did it. So life had changed big time for me then. Now I got some more stuff. I'm in business. I ain't got to go out and take nothing, steal nothing. I ain't got to do that. I got people coming to me. I wasn't playing the big shot. I'm still a humble guy, you know, but I'm always on the lookout, you know, because I don't trust nobody. I don't trust nobody, because the way I see it, everybody's out to get me at that particular time, especially when I got that stuff. You know what I mean? So that's how I saw it. You know, if I got it, you want it, and by any means necessary, you're going to try to get it. So by any means necessary, I'm going to try to make sure I protect myself. You know, and that's what happened. So that went along for a long time. And then one day, when that girl left, I was walking this new friend of mine to her car, and the cop said, "Hey, go back, get in the crowd." I said, "What?" They said, "Go back, the jump outs." But I said, "It was jump outs." I'm surprised they let me get back in the crowd. But I got back in the crowd. Guess where the crowd was at? Right in front of my father's house. I got in the crowd and I did like this. Threw my stuff down. They said, "Okay." Anybody else got anything on him that he sold? He said, "Well, everybody else can go, but I want you to stay here with us." Bam, I'm locked up. I'm like, they say, "Man, you think it was crazy, so you." I said, "I didn't get away that time. I didn't get away. Then I went to jail. Then she got me out. She spent that money, she got me out. Then I came back. And I did it again. And within about 2 weeks, I'm standing there." Now, you got to understand something. You're talking 6-7 years of this, and all of a sudden, it's all sudden impact. You know, two times in less than, you know. And here it is now. You know how the dope crowd is. People around you. Next thing I know, it opens up, and there's a jump out. "Hey, we got that, you know, solid. I'm in jail. I need some witnesses to prove that it wasn't me. I'm going to pick you, you, you. Hey, I need you guys to go with me. Don't worry, I'll take care of you. I'm going to trial." They're going to say that shit was mine. It ain't mine. I'm going to trial. I just need you to go with me. I got you. Don't worry about it. You know, yeah. So we go to trial. Man, the people that came to court for me looked doubly worse than I did. You know what I mean? If you know anybody that shot dope or smoked crack or whatever, you know what we look like after, you know, years of that shit. You know. But anyway, I'm looking at these people, man, and I'm like, "Oh my God. So this ain't gonna work out." You know? So they call a recess. So we got a trial now. I'm going down the escalator in D.C. I'm going down the escalator. You know, I said, "I still should be able to beat this. You know, I'm pretty lucky. I should be able to beat this. You know, I'll play the Vietnam role on them. You know, I'll get them. You know, I'm going to escalator. Two ladies behind me, and they saying, you know, they didn't know it was me. They must have. They say, you know, that you say those people, they look terrible. They look terrible." Say, "They jurors now. These are jurors." They say, "They look terrible. This is an escalator." They say, "Yeah." Say, "But guess what? I'm gonna find him not guilty. You know, because that same cop arrested my nephew." And I turned around. And I looked at them two people, and I said, "My life is worth the fact that the cop arrested her nephew. No other reason. She just said, 'I'm not going to find him guilty.' I don't know where it came from, but she said, 'I'm not going to find him guilty.' You know?" And I said, "Well, I'll be there." So this ain't right. I'm guilty. I'm going to stop this. I told my lawyer, who was a good Christian man, so to speak. I said, "We got to stop the case." He said, "Why?" I said, "Because I'm guilty." He said, "Huh?" I said, "I'm guilty."
He said, "You want me to stop the case because you're guilty?"
I said, "Yeah." I said, "Look, I've been stringing you along." I says, "I guess you knew that." He said, "Well, I kinda, but you know, you look like a nice guy, you know?" And I said, "Okay, all right." And man, that happened. And that was one of the things, that was one of the low costs. That was when my fun expired. That's when my fun had an expiration date. That was when I knew the ball game was kind of over for me. And I went into a treatment center, you know. But in between all of that, guy asked me one time, the dope dealer, the guy I was getting my dope from, I mean, you gotta imagine a dope fiend getting dope in time. You know, I'm getting like lunch bags full of it. You know what I mean? 20 packs like that, 30 packs. And I'm like, I'm sitting on top of the world. You know, I'm working for a guy, you know? And he asked me one time, we were in his ice cream truck. Yeah, I'm riding shotgun in ice cream truck, you know what I mean? And you know what he asked me? He said, "Jesse," I said, "Yeah, I'm drinking some Wild Irish Rose, you know. He ain't doing nothing. He don't do no dope or nothing." He said, "Jesse," he said, "man, would you shoot somebody for me?" Huh? He said, "Would you shoot somebody for me?" This is all in seconds. Yeah, I shoot somebody for you. I told another man, I was being pimped in a sense. I told another man that I would shoot somebody for him just to have some dope. You know, I mean, I don't know how many of us have ever done anything outrageous or outlandish for some drugs. You know, but that was one of the things I did, you know, and I don't know, my life, before I went into the drug treatment center, I was living in this abandoned house up the street from where I used to live at. With my father, the house was ready to fall, but it was like about three or four of us in there, and we took control of the house. And I saw that house fall. I wasn't in it, but I saw that house fall. That house actually fell. And that was a house that I lived in, you know. You know, my first, you know, snorting heroin was the first, was like, hey, this is nice. Shooting heroin was even better. It gave me such a thrill that I just couldn't explain to you what it was like. I mean, there ain't nothing that I probably wouldn't have did for that. I stopped going to school for that. I couldn't go to work for that. I couldn't keep a woman for that. I couldn't keep a car for that. I couldn't keep a place to live for that. I couldn't finish school for that. I couldn't even look at myself for that. I got to the point I didn't even look at myself. I go past a mirror, I do like this. I turn to the left or right so I wouldn't have to notice it. But that's the way I was. I paid a lot of money. I gave up a lot of money. And not just in cash, but in a lot of myself, a lot of my life. But I did. I gave up a lot. And when I went into the hospital, one good thing happened to me, which added to the awakening that I had already had. And that was the nurse. I was ailing so bad. I was ailing so bad from that withdrawal. And I asked that nurse, I said, ma'am. She said, what's the matter with you, baby? You all right? She's a nurse. I said, what's the matter? You okay? You're going to be okay? I said, this thing hurts so bad. I said, I just don't know. I just don't know what I can do. I said, I should leave and go. I said, maybe. She said, aren't you going in the Salvation Army? I said, well, yeah, I'm supposed to go. She says, didn't the judge and everything? I said, yeah. I said, but, you know, I got to get out of here. I say, I'm starting to hurt. I said, the stuff you're giving me ain't working. Can you give me some more, please? I got to go. I got to do something. You know, she looked at me and gave me this look, kind of like she could have been my mother or something, or my grandmother or something. And she gave me this look, and she looked at me and she said, baby, you only have to do this one time. Just one time. And you'll never have to do it again. That was the second bell that went off in my head. When she said that, I looked at her like she was an angel. I couldn't believe what I heard. It was so simple. It seems it was simple then, but then it rung the bell for me. It told me that I could be all right if I just hang in there. And I decided to do that. And I went to the Salvation Army. And I wanted to get out of there. But I decided that I was going to make the move and I was going to stay. And years passed by. Years passed by. And so I became intake counselor and stuff like that. And I'm doing something else now. I decided to go to school. I work in a clinic for anger management, DUIs, drug addictions, stuff like that. You know, the job that I got in the daytime, I got demoted on that job. But I still work there. They took money from me at that job. Where I work at in the nighttime in the counseling, I make as much money now on that job as I did on this job. Actually, I'm making the same amount. The money that I make now, I do things with. I pay stuff. I pay my bills. I can come to the convention. I can have fun. But the life you live, like I said, my fun, the way I see my life right now, is that I don't need to go back. I don't need to. God help me that I never do. But I have people in my life right now that I had to cut back. I mean, I absolutely love these people, but I had to cut them back because they keep bringing me into their web. I want to reach out and help them, and I've done it. But every time I've done it, I found myself surrounded by addicts. And it scares the hell out of me. And when I say I gotta go, I gotta leave, they say, what's wrong? You too good for us? You know, you're too good. You don't want to hide. I said, I don't want the life no more. So I had to cut them loose. It's a hard thing because right now they're paying a lot of money to lose everything. And I've seen it. I've seen the progression happen to them. I've seen the appearance and the other things that go along with that. The mannerisms, the way they act, all that stuff. You know, and it's one of those kind of things that, you know, when you got people you love, you don't want to see that happen. So two things I can do. I can stay in it and try to fight the good fight. Or I can go and go to a meeting, come to a convention. You know, because nothing changed. Nothing will change. So I'm going to do the best I can from this point on to stay out of the low life. Life hits me still hits me in the head, on the side, in the chin, in the jaw. It still punches at me all the time. Sometimes I don't know if I'm going to make it, you know. But I know one thing I'm not going to do. I know I'm not going to use. And that's where I'm at today. You know, it was that life I lived, you know, was really, I don't know, it just seems like it's just complete madness. I don't know. I don't know what to say about it, except I am so glad I'm with y'all. I'm so glad that I'm with you today. I'm so glad because there ain't nothing happening, man. Don't go back. There ain't nothing there for us no more. Pain and misery. That's it. Protect your kingdoms. You kings and you queens, protect your kingdoms. Be careful what you let inside. Be careful who tries to infiltrate it. Come to a meeting. Call somebody. Pray. Do something. You know. But be mindful. If you can help them, try to help them with somebody else. I couldn't. I had to leave. So, thanks for letting me share. I appreciate it. Thanks.